This is the DMT One-to-One Show, episode 25, on the 4th of September 2013, a feature on the company F-Sharp, connecting brands and consumers through music. And the DMT One-to-One Show this week is sponsored by Sheridans at sheridans.co.uk. Welcome to the DMT One-to-One Show, and this week the show is dedicated to the company F-Sharp, and joining me today are Dan Meritz, a CEO and co-founder, and Pete Jimison, a COO and a co-founder as well. So hi guys, and great to have you on the show. How's it going today?
Good. It's great. Great to be here.
Thanks. Great to have you on, and a very nice graffiti in the background, as I commented in the prep. It's great to have you on, and first of all, what is F-Sharp?
F-Sharp is the leader in digital music advertising. So we integrate streaming, rewarding music content into multi-screen branded experiences. So yep. Consumers can engage wherever they are, and brands get the consumers to consume music the way that they want to, and really act as the envelope in delivering content that they know that they'll love and that's personalized to that individual user.
Yeah, and music, of course, is at the core of the company. So what spurred you to start F-Sharp, and what was the gap in the market that you spotted when you started the company?
Yeah, so when we started the company about a year and a half ago, it's really when Spotify and other social music platforms were really starting to take hold within the US and the larger markets in the world. And what we were seeing is that music platforms were really spending a lot of time on growing their audience, but yeah, not necessarily working on how to actually monetize their audience through branded experiences that were actually incredibly engaging. So the market opportunity that we saw is that there is a significant need for incredibly engaging experiences to help platforms like Spotify monetize using large brands. And so what we did is really went after that particular place within the market to really make sure that the ecosystem that was being created within the social music space actually had a monetization vehicle outside of boring banner ads that have low engagement rates.
Of course. And Peter, you started out, the company started out in the midst of a big bubble in New York as well of startups, working in media and tech and the crossover of the two. So how did you find that experience?
It's been quite actually riveting. I mean, we're actually based in Silicon Alley, right off of Broadway.
Yeah.
And I would say we're seeing just companies pop up left and right. And in the last year, I would say, with meetups and such, you're seeing probably, an additional one or two meetups just based around digital music in New York.
That's awesome. That's really cool. And so you work closely with Spotify, and this has given you a great amount of perspective on what works and what doesn't work with the fans, and music fans, of course, and users of the platform. And on top of that, you've, of course, over the course of the company's work, you developed different types of ads that you serve depending on the company, on what they're advertising and who they're targeting as well. So can you talk us through a little bit, maybe two or three of the most engaging or popular options that you're serving at the moment as far as ads are concerned?
Yeah, absolutely. So the fundamental recipe of success that we found is that users want content that they love. And what we've found works the best is showing consumers music content that they are familiar with and that they're curious about. And what we've developed in that is about five or six standard ad solutions that seem to deliver the best results consistently. So one of the recent campaigns that has done extremely well within Ireland is a campaign for Absolute. And Absolute came to us with a desire to engage around a particular type of playlist for different types of experience or different types of social experiences, if you will. So we launched an auto-generated playlist is the name of the type of product with Ireland and Absolute, and that allowed users to get a very personalized generated playlist based on their music tastes and really the guidance of the brand. And what that does for the brand is it creates an everlasting playlist that's branded Absolute and a playlist that consumers can listen to, whether they're at a party or having a dinner party or whatever within those types of experiences. So
yeah, sure. And on that front, any other types of ads that you want to talk us through?
Yeah, absolutely. What we've also found is by partnering with other people within the digital music ecosystem, like SoundDrop, that we're able to put pretty compelling branded experiences with very high user engagement. So One Direction, a UK pop band favorite, is launching their movie this week, actually. I think it comes out on tomorrow. And what we did with One Direction is helped generate buzz leading up to the actual SoundDrop Room experience, where people could analyze their favorite playlist and see what One Direction star they were. And that, within the population of 13 to 21-year-olds, does extremely well to see which One Direction star you are. And that basically led up a lot of buzz into the actual listening room session that happened on Sunday before the VMAs here, and generated a lot of users, lots of engagement, lots of chatter, and it was really fun to watch people vote up different songs that the One Direction movie had put together for that playlist. So,
yeah, Andrea, on top of that, a lot of things that we do here at F Sharp, we partner with other music providers of data, et cetera. Yeah. So people like Rovi, in this case, it was SoundDrop that it offered that in-room experience for the chatting with One Direction and their fans. But others like Mood Agent and Echo Nest to enhance the experiences that we're offering for these brand advertisers.
Yeah, that's great, because of course that's the missing link to be able to create an engaging advert that is also personalized and makes sense to the end user. And talking about personalization and demographics, so I was wondering, what is your approach on Spotify and other platforms as well, as far as demographic targeting is concerned, and how does that affect, of course, the accounts that you take on? Do you only work with big major brands, or are you happy to work with a localized partner that might be interested in advertising in a specific part of the United States, or that might have a smaller budget, for example?
Yeah, I mean, we work with different brands all over the world, so... Yeah. Two of the biggest growth areas that we have are across Europe as well as into Asia. So obviously the largest ad budgets in the world come out of North America, but we have solutions and ad products that do incredibly well in very localized markets. So even if it's a very Dutch oriented experience that's just launched in Holland, for example, we've done a number of those types of campaigns. And as we look into Singapore and Taiwan and Hong Kong, for example, there's a lot of really localized specific types of experiences that allow brands of really any size and any ad budget to create a pretty compelling experience that drives that engagement.
Yeah, that's great. And so in that sense, you work quite closely with, I guess, on the Spotify front, who are still one of your biggest clients, with their advertising team, who, of course, are engaged in conversation with ad buyers all over the country, right?
Yeah, we work with a number of partners, including Spotify worldwide, to bring music. And what we found is that really the overall music ecosystem needs a number of ways to monetize in order to support itself. So we look at really how do we bring the brands and the music services together in order to deliver the most value in sustaining the ecosystem and experiences.
Yeah, and that's very interesting, actually, because we're talking on the show, on the news show, about the rumors surrounding, iTunes Radio and their potentially corporate, advertising buyers that we've seen in the press in the last few days. And it's interesting to see a company that is working in music that is actually creating personalized, engaging experiences on large corporate brands that otherwise have quite a bit of difficulty relating to the end user of a campaign. So have you found that that's sort of the driving force behind the success of F-Sharp as well?
Absolutely. And I think what we look at is sort of the iRadio and all of the larger players coming into the streaming music space in new and interesting ways is really lifting all boats, if you will, and really helping brands worldwide realize that there's an opportunity to really create a focus or a pillar of their branding strategy using music. And we're finding that to be, instead of just, you know, an afterthought or, you know, a single type of experience, they're really figuring out, how do I make music core and central to engaging that emotional passion point with that consumer that drives brand awareness, that drives consumer intent in pretty interesting ways.
Yeah, I mean, we're playing around the space of where users right now currently are already in music, sharing, discovering. We're exploring exactly the same elements that they're, that you see with users on Facebook or with other digital music providers. and we're just taking that and wrapping a brand around that experience for advertisers.
Yeah, and you've worked a lot with the creative industries as well. So how does the difference between the engagement of users in a cultural product like an album release or a movie release differ from the engagement of users in a vodka brand or in a water brand, for example?
Yeah, it's interesting. One of my favorite campaigns was for a movie called Pitch Perfect in the United States, but was branded as Hit Girls in most of Europe. And what we find is in those types of experiences that are localized, the core concept works incredibly well internationally, but it's really the localization that ultimately drives the success of that particular engagement in that particular experience. And even if you have a large, you know, international brand, like some of the large fast food restaurants, what you find is that they have very localized experiences and product launches and things like that. So it's about making sure that you have the flexibility to quickly localize and adapt to that particular market in order to make sure that you don't lose the cultural nuance that will ultimately drive engagement and success.
That's awesome.
We try to find ways to play with the brand's messaging as well. So, for instance, with Gold's Gym in the U.S., we did a tournament-style competition that was based off the NCAA March Madness in the U.S., and it had different brackets that were associated with music, such as tempo or beat, et cetera, that users could then offer a song and then engage and share with their friends and vote songs through to finally find what's the most engaging song right now that is matched to working out and music.
Yeah. And looking at going cross-platform, of course, because as you mentioned, Spotify is only one of your clients right now, and you're expanding into catering for more and more platforms. But I guess a key question would be, because you're focused on music, how do you manage to still deliver a musical or music-related experience within maybe third-party portals that don't have the same amount of integration with the ability of playing a playlist, for example, as Spotify has directly?
Yeah, so we look at most of our experiences being multi-screen from origin, and we build adaptive and responsive experiences for that. And even if we have a Spotify-led experience, oftentimes those will require a microsite, a mobile experience, as well as a Facebook experience.
Yeah.
What we find is that increasingly the user engagement of actually having a music-driven experience, of getting someone to that first level of engagement, whether that results in a playlist or radio or what have you, it can all be managed into whatever that best form factor is and where that user is best going to engage. And I think that adaptive approach is what ultimately drives success for the engagement based on that platform and will ultimately show better return on ad spend for that brand advertiser.
That's great. And let's talk mobile, just to conclude the interview. I wanted to ask you, mobile, of course, is a huge area of growth. We've seen Pandora's Q2 showed a 92% increase year over year for the same quarter on mobile advertising revenues, which is pretty awesome. But still, the mobile advertising experience is pretty sucky on the whole. You know, there's not a huge amount of engagement, and you're served adverts in a pretty flat manner. You know, we've all seen the adverts on Facebook and the promoted tweets on Twitter. So, do you have any thoughts on how that experience could be improved by interacting with music on a mobile level?
Yeah, I mean, basically what we look at in the mobile space is really driving that forward is that any major urban area and most of the places that you go, you see people walking around with headphones and a mobile phone and things like that. So really the gateway into successful advertising on the mobile space is really engaging audio experiences that drive people into an interactive experience. So there are, you know, types of awareness that can be built into a lot of these mobile products that know where you are and what you're near and whether they serve a relevant audio ad within that, that drives you into that next part of that experience. I think that's the first part of the dynamic nature that's incredibly important. And then the second part is, can the user actually get a rewarding experience out of interacting with that mobile ad from there? And what we're seeing is really a push into how do you create that next listening experience or that music discovery experience that's aided by the brand within the mobile that's driven through the audio component. And I think what we'll see over the next two or three quarters is a big, you know, push into how do you create both a sort of a lean back and lean forward experience within that mobile ad unit that's going to drive a lot more engagement that's interesting for the consumer and just not an errant click here and there that's creating these artificially high CTRs on those things.
That's great. That's awesome. Well, you know, the website is efsharp.com, and I'm going to throw a few links in the show notes as well to show people the type of work that you've been doing over the past few months. And it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and really look forward to seeing what you guys are going to be up to next.
Thank you. Thanks,
Andre. Thank you. And now a quick word with the media law firm Sheridan's, who sponsored this episode of the DMT 1-to-1. I'm here with Tahir Bashir from Sheridan's, and this week we're going to talk about 360 deals. And so what are 360 deals all about, and how do they work today?
So I think we did the first 360-degree deal, or the first one that was really publicized, the Robbie Williams one. They are essentially a record company now says that there's not enough money in just recorded income revenue, so they would want a share of merchandise income, live income, in some instances publishing income, and in some instances management income as well. So the 360-degree deal is basically income from an artist's career. All 360, all around, you know, whatever they're doing.
Yeah. And so what are the general ranges that artists should expect? Because, of course, I'm sure that the cuts are going to vary a lot depending on the popularity of the artist and where they are in their careers too.
Yeah, I mean, there's no one size fits all, to be honest, and it depends very much, as you say, where the artist is in their career. So if you've got an established artist, you know, we generally try not to do 360-degree deals at all. But newer artists, they've got to expect, if they're going to major label as opposed to independent, that there is a expectation that, say, for example, with merchandise, somewhere between 10-15% of the merchandise income is going to be set aside for the label. Similarly, with live income, that could be, you know, once again, 20 to even up to 40% of that income. From my perspective, as a lawyer representing artists, the main thing there is, does the label justify that income? What do they do for it?
Sure. And looking at the 360 deal model, it was very hyped maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, especially when the Robbie Williams deal came out. But what has happened since then? And is it still as widely used as people think?
Yeah, I mean, it all comes down to income levels. Income levels have dropped in recorded sales, as we all know. So record companies invest, you know, and they need to justify that investment. So to justify that investment, they need to get shares of other income. So that's the perceived perception. It's becoming common now, as I say, particularly major labels. So it's something that, you know, artists have to look at, you know, from day one. As I said, then you'd expect some investment back to reflect that. The types of deals which, you know, I hate are those where a label's putting in very minimal investment and expect a share of everything.
Absolutely. That's great. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening to the DMT 1-to-1 show, and remember to check out digitalmusictrends.com for our weekly news show.